Welcome, everyone, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
She's wearing the fall colors. This is the show where we seek the truth, covering the stories you might not see in the mainstream media. We're going to cut through a lot of propaganda on tonight's episode, and we've got a special guest who's going to be joining us to talk about a bombshell new report that says U.S. forces have been and are actively on the ground, boots on the ground in Ukraine, despite the Biden administration's denial. So they've been lying right to our faces about this. We've been reporting on this for months, but now we have confirmation of said report.
Plus, we are going to talk about data that the CDC released on adverse events to the COVID vaccine. They did not want to release this data. They had to be sued to do it. So that litigation has accomplished its purpose, and we do have some data to go over.
Why do we only have to, we have to rely on lawsuits in order to get information about the vaccine adverse effects?
It really doesn't help the reputation of America as such a litigious nation that this is the way to get that information.
Also, it doesn't help the reputation of the United States of America on their treatment of Julian Assange and trying to extradite a journalist, one of the greatest journalists probably in world history, arguably, to the United States to spend the rest of his life behind bars. Last night, Stella Assange took on a war criminal, and there's a big event happening this weekend in Washington, D.C. on Julian Assange. So all of that we will talk about tonight on the show.
Plus some updates around the backlash in the U.K., around the transgendered charity that was doing some very questionable things. Now it was found out that one of the backers of that charity has a very... We're going to have to figure out how to talk around this person. Clayton and I were talking about this because it's a word that we can't really say on YouTube. It's a form of sexual deviance. Mm-hmm. We're going to get there. We're going to come up with a code word, and it will be safe.
How about this? We'll call it the Epstein.
No, that's not really. I mean, I don't want to make fun, right?
It's not making fun. I'm just, you know, but we got to think of a.
We're going to get there. So don't type it in the chat, because if you say that too much, we might get in trouble. We just want to make sure that we are doing things that will not get us flagged on YouTube. But I also want to bring you this very topical story. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that at the end of the show.
But you don't have to worry about that to our friends over on Rumble.
We
could say it all we want. So hello, Rumble, to all of our Rumble fans over there. You know how YouTube operates. With all of that being said, we've got a very busy show for you on this Thursday night. So Redacted starts right now. I like the name Peter. I think Peter is,
We can talk about it.
We can talk about Peter.
Okay.
Maybe that's how we'll talk about it. Forgive me in advance if your name is that. I apologize. But we'll talk about Peter on tonight's show. How about that?
Did you ever see the episode of the It Crowd or the IT Crowd? I wasn't exactly sure where her boyfriend's name is Peter. And his last name is, and the way that they say it in the UK sounds like this word, and they're like, don't call him that.
Well, she's like, it doesn't sound like that till she hears it over the airport speaker system.
Right. That's right. I loved that show so much. I binged it when I was pregnant.
Oh, it's a great show.
I wonder if I should watch it now with my kids.
I binged it, but I was not pregnant, so.
Are you sure?
He had a food baby.
I'm positive.
Yeah, you don't know in 2022. Anyway, listen, we've got a busy show for you today. We're going to get to all of this news in a moment, and stay with us because we've got a special guest here, and we've got some really interesting journalism that we wanted to unpack for you today. But we do have a daily newsletter that you should all subscribe to. It's totally free. I should point out, when you're over here, see there's two options there. You can either sign up for our newsletter, or you can become a VIP member of our community and support independent journalism. So your choice. You can do whatever you like, but go to redacted.in. It's totally free. You can sign up. And you can support our channel for the price of a cup of coffee if you'd like to once a month. You can do that. We are independent journalists. We are not funded by billionaires like the mainstream media. So without further ado. All right, let's get into it. We've got a lot of news and territory to cover tonight on tonight's show. So let's talk about the very latest in Ukraine because... I mean, we're edging towards world war. And over the past few hours, some major news on that front. We now have confirmation that the United States of America has been lying to us about U.S. forces in Ukraine. We have the U.S. stockpiling drugs to fight radiation sickness in case of a nuclear fallout. Or nuclear explosions. So they're buying up all of the radiation drugs. Vladimir Putin launched a massive military operation today, which we will talk about. And the European Union just launched a new round of record sanctions against Russia because the current round of sanctions has really been working for them.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cannot wait for $10 gas.
But first, let's talk about what Russian Parliament did. We're going to get to the Zelensky craziness in just a moment here, but a lot of moving pieces we want to cover. So first, it's official. The Russian Parliament has now ratified agreements on Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, Zaporozhye and Kherson regions, admission into Russia this afternoon. This was the Russian Parliament just a short time ago. You will not see this on CNN. Watch. So, yeah, that is Russian Parliament clapping, applauding after they officially ratify. They opened it up for voting for all of the parliamentary members there. And then, of course, they made it official. And now it is official. So then not surprisingly, we'll get to what happened in just a moment. But Sergey Lavrov then right after this spoke out and says, we don't actually care about the West's recognition of the results of the referendum, but they have to understand the new reality. So deal with it.
Right. So all of the heads of state and secretaries of state who are releasing statements saying we don't recognize this, it's not real, it's not happening, it doesn't exist to us. Right. So now go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really make a difference in the way that this region will operate now as officially Russia.
Right. And so then a short time after that, Russia launched a massive military operation. Any coincidence that this is then ratified, applause, done, and then, okay, it's official, mobilize?
No, there was no guesswork in this. We've been given a roadmap. For the last 2 weeks, it's been very clear. This is what we're going to do. Once the election is done, we'll see what the will of the people is. And if it is to join Russia, we will act this way. So none of this should be surprising.
Yeah. And we knew that this was going to come sooner or later. Right. I mean, sooner,
well, we knew
sooner
exactly what the pivot point was.
Right.
So, yes.
And the military was going to launch a devastating attack on Ukrainian forces. And they did just that this afternoon. So the update, we have a small update, at least on some of the major military operations this afternoon, which is a major attack on Kherson. The Russian military attacked in all directions and pushed the armed forces of Ukraine from the line of defense. This was reported by the journalists and to the Ministry of Defense. According to the agency, the Russian military managed to destroy more than 100 Ukrainian servicemen, as well as 6 tanks, 8 armored combat vehicles, and 9 vehicles. The ministry also reported on strikes on the points of temporary deployment of the 35th Marine Brigade of the Armed Forces of Ukraine in the Kherson region. In addition, so this is the big piece I wanted to point out, is now the aerospace forces of Russia pounding targets in a way that we haven't seen before. So the Russian aerospace forces dealt high precision blows to the points of deployment of the armed forces of Ukraine in the Nikolaev area and on
other
targets.
Can I just point out that that's a very passive image to go with such an aggressive news article? Look at it again. Hey. They're just chilling out there like
Little House
trading
on the Prairie.
Some smokes.
Little House on the Prairie. Like,
and this
for,
is like all hell's raining loose, but these two dudes are okay.
Hey, Sergey, you want to go hunting for pheasants? That's what it looks
it's
like, right?
It's a strange image that it just doesn't comport with what I'm reading right now.
Well, or it does not comport with the videos and images that I was looking at today of the advancements of these troops. So they're bloody and it's awful. This is war, but it was absolutely devastating. Also, Der Spiegel, which is up there on your screen, that's a German newspaper. Ukraine's forces are being devastated and these little offensive movements are being met with crushing defeats. That's why today, according to Der Spiegel, the German newspaper, the European Union is set to train 15,000 new Ukrainian soldiers. The European Union, according to Der Spiegel, is training 15,000 new Ukrainian soldiers.
Okay.
European Union.
Yes. I mean, we knew that many of them had been being flown to Britain for this. So where is that happening?
Well, a lot of it was happening in Germany. It was happening in Stuttgart, actually. We also know at Ramstein Air Force Base. So a lot of the training was happening there. It was also happening in Kent in the UK. And there was also training in Denmark. Mm-hmm. So there's been training in multiple locations throughout the European Union and England, which is no longer in the European Union. I think the big news, there's a whole bunch of big news today. But this major piece that happened just shortly before we came on the air is what Vladimir Zelensky just issued a statement, basically saying NATO needs to strike preemptively now inside of Russia. I mean, now the cat's out of the bag. It's not us. NATO needs to attack Russia inside Russia. And oh, by the way, yes, go ahead and use nuclear weapons. This is Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. Watch.
Що повинно робити НАТО? Унеможливлювати застосування Росією ядерної зброї. Але, що важливо, я ще раз звертаюсь до міжнародної спільноти. Як це було до 24-го? Превентивні удари, щоб вони знали, що з ними буде, якщо вони застосують, а не навпаки, чекати ядерних ударів Росію, щоб потім сказати, ах, ти так, ну ось тримай від нас. Переглянути застосування свого тиску. Ось я вважаю, що повинна робити НАТО. Переглянути порядок застосування.
Okay.
Okay, maybe the translation's off because that logic was completely flawed. He's saying we need to strike so that Putin doesn't think, oh, you want it that way, then we're gonna... That's exactly what he said. Oh, you want it that way, then we'll strike.
He
Do
said,
you
so,
see the flaw in this logic?
Yeah, I mean, there's other reports of him. You can, and if we have any Ukrainian viewers who can study that themselves. But here's another take on this, which is this news piece: NATO must make it impossible for Russia to use nuclear weapons, according to Zelensky. President Zelensky believes that NATO should make it impossible for Russia to use nuclear weapons. Preemptive strikes are needed so that they know what awaits them if they use nuclear weapons. So preemptive strikes are needed. So we need to attack inside Russia using NATO forces.
He's calling for the death of civilians here.
Yes.
Millions, right?
Yes.
And because then that would launch a domino effect of retaliation. So he doesn't mind killing Russian civilians.
No.
And he also doesn't mind the retaliation on Western civilians.
Meanwhile,
either.
And then Putin...
Which is completely opposite of what Putin has said. Putin has tried so hard to minimize casualties. So it's like completely different language. If you listen to Putin, he's like, we're going to do it with as minimal casualties. And then he's calling for just like all out, who cares about
right.
civilians.
Yeah. Yeah, just carpet bomb them. It doesn't really matter. We will just take it to them. So the U.S. tactics. The Kremlin responded a short time ago. Vladimir Putin's spokesman slamming Ukrainian president, demanding for preventative strikes on Russia. The Kremlin has accused Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky of trying to spark a third world war after he demanded that NATO carry out preemptive strikes on Russia to deter the use of nuclear weapons. Zelensky stated that NATO must ensure Moscow does not use nukes against Kyiv forces. To do this, he called the U.S.-led military bloc and international community carried out preemptive strikes against Russia so that it knows what to expect. Meaning, like,
I think they know.
Well, I mean, you know,
he
didn't get his NATO application approved. That was denied. Looks like he had some priors. so he wasn't able to get in there. And then we also found out today that the United States is saying that we will not be sending nuclear weapons to Poland. So that's at least a positive sign from the American side. We're not going to send nukes to Poland. The Poland asked for them. We're not going to send them there. Instead, we'll just continue to build that massive military base in Poland. We're fine with that. We're not going to send nuclear weapons, though. And then with all of that, we have new EU sanctions this afternoon. So now the European Union approving new anti-Russian sanctions this afternoon because the first round has been going really well for them, right?
Great.
They can't turn the heat on. They're blowing up their pipeline. It's going to work out really well for them. The eighth package of restrictions includes a price cap related to the maritime transport of Russian oil for third countries.
Okay, more restrictions on oil. That's exactly what we need in a down economy and with less oil to go around.
So the European Union has announced a new batch of biting measures. They call these biting measures intended to reinforce pressure on the Russian government and economy. According to a statement published on its website on Thursday, the sanctions package introduces into EU legislation the basis to put in place a price cap related to the maritime transport of Russian oil for third countries and further restrictions on maritime transport of crude oil and petroleum products to third countries.
Well, meanwhile, the United States had said that in response to OPEC drawing back the global oil supply by 2%, which means that it will be so much harder for sanctions to take place. The United States was saying, well, we're going to do some strongly worded things as well. Right. So this is the European response. The United States this morning reportedly is trying to figure out how to get around its own sanctions and start to work with Venezuela. Right. So the sanctions are there because they put it in place. In fact, they actually are indicting currently the president, Nicolas Maduro. But they're like, we're going to see if we can get around that because we need to work with Venezuela if we're not going to work with Russia. Venezuela is an OPEC country. Right. So it's all really semantics. It's all for show at this point.
Totally for show. And our show is for show. So faux show. Can you subscribe to the channel? If you subscribe to the channel, your name will pop up here like Narabongo just subscribed. And if you just smash that like button, we've got nearly 40,000 of you watching. We only have 4,000 likes. Oh, but go ahead and smash the like button. It pushes us further out in the algorithm to reach other individuals. I also want to mention the Belgium sanctions. So this, the Belgian prime minister came out today and said, what are you guys, crazy? He said, now that you're face, what we're going to do is we're going to face deindustrialization in Europe and social unrest with these sanctions. And so this is Belgium's prime minister saying we are risking massive deindustrialization of the European continent and the long-term consequences that might actually be very deep, he says. So, yeah, and we're already seeing that. And we're already seeing, like, the United Kingdom slipping into a third world country. So that's happening right before our eyes. The Biden administration thinks that nuclear war is coming in the United States. They just bought up all of the anti-radiation drugs for use in a nuclear emergency. This is from the Health and Human Services yesterday. They just printed this on their website. The Health and Human Services purchases drugs for use in radiological and nuclear emergencies. They bought up like 300 million rounds of it. So yay, great. Now we've got that. So as part of a longstanding ongoing effort to better be prepared to save lives following radiological and nuclear emergencies, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is purchasing a supply of the drug NPLAT from Amgen. Oh, so we're buying drugs from the biopharmaceutical complex under the auspices of keeping you all safe.
To put it in a stockpile, I'm sure.
Right.
Okay. Yesterday I made the comparison of Cipro. Right.
Right.
During the colored coded emergencies of the Bush administration.
Right. Red, yellow,
all
alerts,
of that stuff.
Yes.
And we all thought for sure we would get anthrax in the mail as a result.
You never got any anthrax in the mail?
No.
No.
Nobody.
I ordered some. It never came, though.
Nobody really wanted to send me any anthrax at the time. But those things were being stockpiled, too. And that became sort of, this was before there was a meme. It was a meme. It's how you get Cipro, right?
Right.
And so will this be the new Cipro? What is called BARDA?
Or Amgen. Or NPLATE. NPLATE. N-P-L-A-T-E. Have any of you in the chat actually sought out ordering this kind of stuff? I mean, this is, again, a wet kiss for the biopharmaceutical complex.
Oh, absolutely. And what is it that Dr. John Campbell had said that he would get stockpiles of? David, do you remember? If there were radiation fallout, he said I would get
Iodine,
I believe.
I think he said iodine.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. So I don't know if that's patented into any kind of, we'll have to look into this. I don't know.
Anyway, that being said, we have a bombshell. We have a bombshell new report out today from The Intercept detailing how the United States has been using extensive deployment of U.S. troops inside Ukraine, and they are conducting unknown operations. This is unbelievable. But totally believable if you've been watching our show for any length of time. We've been reporting on this. So let's read from the Intercept report here. Interestingly, if you look at the title of this, I don't understand how The Intercept titled this article this way. The CIA thought Putin would quickly conquer Ukraine. Why did they get it so wrong? Okay. But kind of halfway through the article, they dropped the bombshell that secret U.S. operations inside Ukraine are being conducted under a presidential covert action finding. Yet, yes, clandestine American operations inside Ukraine are now far more extensive than they were early in the war, when U.S. intelligence officials were fearful that Russia would steamroll over the Ukrainian army. There is a much larger presence of both CIA and U.S. special operations personnel resources in Ukraine than were at that time of the Russian invasion in February, several current and former intelligence officials told The Intercept. It goes deeper than that. Secret U.S. operations inside Ukraine are being conducted under a presidential covert action finding, current and former officials said. Deeply troubling. Deeply troubling. And so, again, the U.S. operations aside inside Ukraine are being conducted under this presidential covert action finding. So let's ask the president. Mr. President, as reporters attempted to do today in some part, Mr. President, do you have anything to say for yourself? You've been lying to us the whole time.
That was really strange.
Oh, you're not going to answer that? That's like, I saw someone say, like, that's like me when I go to a family gathering and it gets out of hand. Like
this. Sparky, are you out here for a reason? Or are you just avoiding the family?
Right.
This is our line every holiday.
I wonder if he's been watching The Office and he's just like doing his impression of Michael Scott, like just being, you know.
You know what that reminds me of? I'm sorry, I'm on fire with the movie lines tonight. Is let's see that in an instant replay. He just literally was walking backwards.
Hey guys, you want to ask me a question about our involvement in nuclear war? I gotta go. Can we play that again? Are you worried about it?
So that movie line, in case you didn't catch it, was from Ace Ventura.
So unbelievable. I would want to run out of there too when I'm asked tough questions like that. So what is a presidential covert action finding? This is the technicality that he's authorized the use of U.S. military forces in Ukraine. So what the hell is this?
I'll tell you what it is. Well, it's a way to not get congressional approval to go to war.
Well, of course.
Which exactly. We don't even do anymore. We don't even pretend.
So Michael Tracy explains this in a tweet this afternoon. He says, I wonder if we'll ever get to see a copy of Biden's presidential covert action finding authorizing secret U.S. military operations in Ukraine, or if there's another John Poindexter running around who's determined to make sure we never get to see it. Of course, what he's referring to there is John Poindexter, who worked under was the national security advisor to Ronald Reagan, who ripped it up when it was being used for the Iran-Contra to Reagan's justification for sending arms to the Iranians in the Iran-Contra scandal. We invited excellent independent journalist Michael Tracy on the show to unpack this a little further. So, Michael, I wish I would say I was surprised by this report, but I'm not at all. A sizable number of U.S. forces operating in Ukraine from the start of the war and probably previous to that. What was your response upon seeing this report?
Well, since the moment the war started, I've seen speculation to this effect that there was just assumed to be a presence of American special forces or American personnel of some kind that were on the ground in Ukraine. Now, we did know that there had been a public deployment of actually the Florida National Guard in Ukraine prior to the war. That was a long-term deployment for, you know, quote-unquote training purposes. And what was claimed in February is that that unit or units of the Florida National Guard that had been deployed to Ukraine for training had been withdrawn in anticipation of the Russian invasion, because the idea was the U.S. did not want its forces to be in direct combat with Russia. Certainly, Joe Biden repeatedly pledged that he would not deploy American forces to take part in direct combat against Russia, hence that withdrawal of the National Guard unit. You know, but even aside from that, the internet was flush with speculation that, you know, just kind of just assume in these sorts of situations that there would probably be some sort of covert or, you know, stealth American military presence. Now, I had been looking for months to see if I could get any kind of hard verification of it, hard reporting of it. In April, there was a hard report in the Times, the newspaper in the UK, that a British special forces deployment was physically in Ukraine as of April.
Right, and we've seen videos now, of that.
I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to really be sure what's being depicted on a video. All I know is that for sure there was a report in April in the Times, which is, you know, a very credible newspaper in London, that there was a special forces unit of the UK military in Ukraine physically, on the ground, boots on the ground, so to say. Now, what do you infer from that? Well, most of the time, the UK military does what it does in tandem with the US military. It really operates as a subsidiary, much of the time, of the US military. So you might expect that if there was this on the ground, boots on the ground presence of the UK military, something might be happening likewise with the US, but there was no hard verification of that really, as far as I could tell. You kind of just have to maybe surmise things or infer things. But then yesterday, for the first time that I'm aware of, The Intercept did report, and it's strange because they didn't actually emphasize this in the headline.
Right.
Which you'd think they would. They kind of buried it because they were emphasizing other aspects of the sort of intelligence that they had been made privy to on the, you know, what the U.S. anticipated as to the efficacy of the Russian invasion. I would have personally probably emphasized this part, which is that there have been continuously since the onset of the war, a special forces deployment to inside physically to Ukraine. Now, they don't specify what those special forces have been doing. They don't say whether they've been engaged in combat or not. They don't say really anything at all about what they've been up to. But, you know, what would they be up to in a war zone? I don't know. You tell me. I think it's confirmation of what a lot of people had reasonably suspected, but because of the just very conspicuous dearth of reliable reporting on this war since it began, there hasn't been a whole lot of interest in sussing out these sorts of details.
Yeah.
There's sort of like a moral prohibition in a way on genuinely adversarial reporting around U.S. policy in Ukraine, because many people in the media, in think tank world, in, you know, the political class and so forth, they're convinced in the, you know, unalterable moral, you know, sacrosanctity of this intervention. And so they think if there's some sort of an affront to take a critical or, you know, adversarial journalistic posture toward it. Now, I don't think that's healthy at all. I mean, it's ridiculous that it took 7-8 months for this information to come out in plain text when it was the case all along?
Do you think that I mean, that certainly seems intentional.
The Intercept is not reputable, but you think it would have been more widespread knowledge at this point.
It seemed like this was absolutely intentional. I mean, we've seen definitely reports from Western media, imperial Western media like CNN, et cetera, who reported on the blackouts, not being able to get to the front lines on the part of Ukraine, keeping reporters away from the Ukrainian side. Is it in large part, do you believe they'd be up there? They'd be able to walk right up and see Americans there. CNN reporter. Hey, hey, Iric, you know, here you are. You're Americans. I'm an American. I'm from CNN. Oh, well, you can't mention that on television. So we don't want you anywhere near these front lines.
It's hard to say if that would be the reason why there would be these measures to prevent access to sort of embedded units, which, you know, that's what was done during the Iraq War. That was done, you know, famously during the Gulf War, where everything was broadcast, you know, simultaneously on CNN from these embedded reporters. And there are problems with the, you know, the ethics of embedded reporters to begin with.
Right.
But yeah, the total lack of it seemingly, some indication that there was information control that was pretty stringent at the very least on the part of, you know, the, you know, ruling authorities. The first insight I really got into this that was vivid was a report from this journalist, Seth Harp, who did a big article for Harper's Magazine, I want to say in June or July, but he was there in March, April in Ukraine. And he said that basically what the reporters were doing was sitting in the hotel room and going to briefings by the Ukraine Defense Ministry, and then that was being conveyed and repackaged into news articles. I mean, that's mostly what they're doing. Not exclusively, I'm sure you could find counterexamples, but that was a large percentage of the supposed, you know, on the ground, you know, intrepid reporting that was being done. So it's not surprising that there would be massive blind spots. When I was on the Ukraine border in March in Poland, this is sort of a small facet of this in the grand scheme of things, but it just so happened that at a processing center for displaced Ukrainian, mostly Ukrainians, mostly women and children who had come over the border to Poland, I happened to just encounter an American man in neo-military fatigues wandering around who told me, and you know, he gave a credible account that he actually had been in this giant military complex in Yavoriv, which was struck by a huge Russian aerial bombardment a few days prior. And I only raise that because when John Kirby, who was then the spokesperson for the Pentagon, was asked about that incident, he said no Americans were affected. And yet here's an American telling me personally that not only was he affected, he was in the bombing, he was injured by flying shattered glass, and he said that he was nearly killed. If he had just been positioned slightly differently on his bed, he would have been basically impaled by the shards of glass and killed.
Wow.
And so that totally contradicts what Kirby said. So, I mean, you'd have to, that's the attitude you have to take toward a lot of this. So much is being obscured, whether deliberately or not, that it's really hard to draw any firm conclusions about much of anything until you get hard proof.
Well, speaking of John Kirby, well, we heard from former, I mean, if you're in the same, they probably hang out together, former CIA director, former four-star general David Petraeus, who's been on a media tour over the past week, clearly being pushed out there by the Biden-Obama lackeys, trying to drum up more support for this. He was interviewed in an exclusive interview, I believe this one was on ABC, I forget. He's done so many of these interviews recently, where he said, it seemed like unequivocally, no, U.S. boots are not on the ground. U.S. boots are not on the ground. Maybe some of our allies have boots on the ground, referring to the U.K. and others, but we are not. Let's play that sound, but I want to get you to respond.
We're not going to put boots on the ground. That doesn't mean there may not be other capabilities or that there may not be some of our closest allies with boots on the ground, everyone working together.
Okay, so do you hear something different there? Like, it seemed to me like he's saying, no, U.S. was not there. We're not there. But do you hear that differently?
You know, David Petraeus is a very skilled practitioner of public communications, as you might expect for someone who is director of the CIA, even though he had to, you know, leave that post somewhat ignominiously. Right. And, you know, as the, you know, architect of U.S. military strategy in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, you did all kinds of public testimonies and went before Congress and so forth. So he's practiced at this. I didn't take what he said there to be a flat denial that any quote unquote boots are on the ground, meaning that any U.S. military personnel are on the ground in Ukraine. I took him to be basically restating what the Biden administration's stated policy is, which is that no boots on the ground will be in Ukraine. But like again, the reason why they use that term is because it's so incredibly vague. Barack Obama said there will be no boots on the ground in Syria at the beginning of the intervention against ISIS, supposedly, in 2014. And, you know, soon enough, there were not just boots on the ground, but U.S. military personnel were sustaining casualties. So when they talk about boots on the ground, do they mean, you know, U.S. Army soldiers? Because they're the only ones in the U.S. military who wear boots.
Right, infantry.
I think that's sort of a distraction or a deflection, right? I mean, whatever the... If there are U.S. military personnel on the ground in Ukraine, as has now been reported by The Intercept, seemingly corroborated, they've even provided the presidential covert action finding that Biden apparently signed in secret to authorize this operation.
I wanted to ask you about that. So
presumably those personnel are wearing boots, right? So, right. I mean, ultimately the whole boots on the ground sort of mantra is sort of a deliberate obfuscation.
Let's talk about this presidential covert action finding. If anybody watching right now who's not a student of history might not be aware of what this phrase means and how it's been used in history, I was surprised to read this in this report also, that this is how President Biden was using this in order to justify putting boots on the ground inside Ukraine, the presidential covert action finding. What is this? How has it been used before? And what power does it give the presidency?
Well, it's a pretty obscure mechanism, as you might expect for a mechanism that's intended to be kept secret, to authorize secret operations.
Right.
According to the Intercept report, this finding as they call it, really, you just call it an order. It's sort of a presidential assertion of power, originated during the Obama administration, the Obama-Biden administration, when apparently Obama signed some order to this effect to counter sort of Russian influence activities, which is a very vague term. It immediately struck me that that sounds like a term that would have been used to describe measures taken to counteract like so-called Russian interference, like online trolls or memes or the stuff associated with like the Russiagate narrative circa the 2016 election. But I'm not 100% sure on that. That's what I read when I see that. But, you know, we would need more information, or we would need like the exact text of the document, which is probably not going to be forthcoming for some time. But, you know, Biden apparently is now using that Obama era version of this decree or assertion of power to authorize active war operations with an on the ground military deployment in Ukraine. And now, you know, we, the public, have no ability to actually scrutinize the text of that document to see if it accords with what's actually happening on the ground, because we're not even being told what's happening on the ground. It's coming out in these bits and pieces and, you know, vague increments. And yeah, I mean, this is a very obscure order again for a reason. You know, there's one of the most famous instances of an order like this being issued was by Ronald Reagan in December of 1985, when he issued one of these, you know, findings to authorize the, you know, what was then the technically illegal shipment of arms to Iran, you know, right, as part of the what came to be later known as the Iran-Contra affair. And the document that Reagan signed authorizing this secretly was then later destroyed by his national security advisor, John Poindexter, who then got prosecuted criminally for that.
Yeah, and so admitted to it, admitted
huge,
to destroying.
It's a huge deluge of secrecy that these orders fall under. And so it's unclear if we'll ever get to see what Biden actually signed off on.
So do you think the mainstream media, I mean, the mainstream media has, of course, been holding a very close lens to what the U.S. has been doing in Ukraine. I say that facetiously, of course. Do you think there will be front page stories, CNN.com coverage in nightly newscasts, bombshell report, U.S. forces in Ukraine? Or will this just get swept under the rug and ignored?
Okay, so right now we're in a situation where just yesterday the New York Times reports that the U.S. intelligence agencies believe that Ukraine, the Ukraine government, carried out an assassination car bomb attack out just outside of Moscow in August on a prominent Russian, you know, philosopher's daughter.
Right.
That's what the U.S. intelligence services say they believe, according to the New York Times. On top of that, there is an emerging consensus among, you know, fairly reputable analysts, media outlets, even very hawkish media outlets like, you know, the Dispatch. They're all putting out articles and proclamations saying that the risk that the U.S. that the U.S. and the world now faces from nuclear destruction is as high as it's been since the Cuban Missile Crisis 60 years ago. So we have that. And then on top of that, we now have the first confirmation that there are boots on the ground in Ukraine. And the U.S. is not just operationally coordinating and subsidizing the war effort against the world's largest nuclear armed power. They're engaging in physical execution of it in the war zone itself, which had never been, at least to my knowledge, acknowledged so openly until this article came out yesterday. So that's a hugely combustible combination of events that you'd think would merit some, you know, front page, so to say, right, coverage or commentary. And, you know, I tend to think that instead we'll get a whole lot of, you know, never-ending recriminations about January 6th instead. That's the more pressing issue for much of the media.
Yeah, it's really stunning, of course, the silence, the media silence on all of this. Again, we'll see. We'll keep our eyes on this to see what sort of additional reporting comes out of this. We'll have to wait 6 months until the New York Times confirms this intercept piece. And then that's when the media will pay attention to it as if it's, you know, just like the Hunter Biden story. We need the New York Times 2 years later to verify the authenticity of a story before we can talk about it, I suppose.
Well, remember, I mean, even just earlier this year, when, you know, suddenly this major Russian warship gets sunk, right? And everybody's saying, rah, rah, look at the ingenuity of the Ukrainians. They're doing such an amazing job. We underestimated their tenacity. It's such a wonderful, inspiring story of, you know, what a military force can do under the, you know, most dire of conditions. And then, you know, the New York Times then eventually afterwards lets us all know that, oh, by the way, it was actually operationally coordinated by the U.S., the sinking of this Russian flagship. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's the pattern. We don't get told anything of significance, usually in real time. And we all just have to kind of read tea leaves until, you know, the New York Times can be bothered to tell us about the secrets whispered to them in, that are probably incomplete themselves from, you know, different intelligence communities.
You know, we've been
sources.
Right, right. And I mean, we've been saying on our show for months, and according to our sources, NATO is actively involved in this war. Absolutely actively involved in this war. NATO is at war with Russia. We are at war with Russia. And I just don't think people really are aware of how consequential that is. You know?
And yeah, I mean, I was, when the war started, I went to the border in Poland, and I went to physically the new military installation that the U.S. had constructed in Yeshiv at this airport facility where they were, this was from where the U.S. was organizing the deployment of huge amounts of armament into a war zone. And it was all shut off from any kind of media scrutiny. And you can't, to this day, to my knowledge, you can't, no journalist has actually examined any of this new military infrastructure that's been constructed. Now, I tried to, you know, catch glimpses of stuff here and there, or see trucks going in and out, or, you know, things being handed off. But it's a massive operation. I mean, and in fact, the U.S., they just announced this at the NATO conference in June, which I also went to in Madrid, that the U.S. is going to be making a base permanent in Poland now.
Right.
And so the idea that was the end of it, or like our knowledge of what is involved in this massive scale military operation was complete was also always just preposterous. And yet, you know, that's not how the situation tends to be portrayed in the media. The media have this sort of like euphoric, you know, joy around, you know, supporting Ukraine or screaming Slava Ukraini or whatever. And that's basically the extent of their, you know, dispassionate analysis of the situation.
And now Poland asking for the United States will just share its nuclear weapons, like a 5-year-old sharing a Thomas the Tank Engine with their friends. So nuclear weapons about to be perhaps shipped to Poland next, on loan perhaps, who knows. Michael, where can people...
I mean, what's the commonly understood to be the precipitating event of the Cuban Missile Crisis? It was Soviets wanting to bring Russia nuclear warheads into Cuba, right?
Right.
Right near the United States landmass.
Right.
Well, Poland's pretty close to Ukraine. It's on the border, actually.
Yeah, but Michael, they don't have an all-important document like the Monroe Doctrine to stop it. So they can't just point to some arbitrary document from the 1700s that will get us to remove nuclear weapons from their borders.
I'm sure James Monroe anticipated all this.
Right, exactly. Michael, where can people learn? Michael's a great writer and a great thinker. We often quote Michael here on the show and feature your tweets. So you're very active on Twitter. Is there someplace else people can find out your great journalism? We need more journalists like you, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, with Twitter, M. Tracy, probably too active at times, but, you know, I try to reel it in. Substacks, mtracy.substack.com. Have a new piece out coming out today.
Oh, great, great. We'll link it up here in the description. People go read Michael's work. Michael, we really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks.
So this is the stage we're in right now. This is the elevation of tensions. I mean, we've got the United States actively, you know, multiple reports now with U.S. forces actively there, and not just a small contingent, but actively in charge of the heavy weapons. This is, of course, as we had David Petraeus here, a total lie on the part of David Petraeus.
Right.
Telling us that, no, there's no active boots on the ground by the United States in Ukraine. Nothing at all. Nothing to see here. You know.
Yeah. It's really shocking, and it feels just like massive escalation right as we speak, but it's not. It has been all along, as right. we've been sold a bill of goods.
But they keep lying to us, so they continue to lie. Let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. We've got more news to get to here on Redacted on this Thursday night. Nice to see all of you. Derek, I see your super chat there. It's nice to see you. Yeah, as he was saying, the lead was buried in that intercept story. Exactly. It's just like unbelievable, like it was buried down there. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about what's going on with the CDC, and because of lawsuits, we're learning about the adverse effects. We're also going to look at Stella Assange versus John Bolton. You do not want to miss this. We're going to dissect this unbelievable interview where Stella Assange basically calls him, well, I won't tell you what she says, but...
Well, she goes all mama bear.
Oh, she was fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to leave it at
fantastic, and it's just amazing to watch a war criminal like wither in his little mustache, his little Yosemite Sam mustache. So I can't wait for you guys to see that video. We'll show you that in a little bit. But first, let's talk about the CDC.
All right. The CDC released data from its V-Safe program showing how many people reported injuries from the COVID-19 vaccine. It did so in response to two lawsuits by ICANN. I'm going to call it ICANN if that's okay by you.
You can.
It is the Informed Consent Action Network.
But so to be clear, this isn't because they from the goodness of their own heart.
No, and it's perplexing because it's not necessarily shocking data. And if they had not been sued for this, we might not think much of it. So we're going to go through what it is. Now, ICANN is an organization that fights against vaccine mandates and seeks out science behind mandated vaccines. It is not an anti-vax, and you know how I feel about that word. It's not an anti-vax organization, but if you Google ICANN or the Informed Consent Action Network, Google just tells you right out that they are anti-vaccine, which is kind of hysterical. So I just took this screenshot to show you, because on the left is the official result of what is what ICANN's homepage. But on the right, Google gives you this summary that says the Informed Consent Action Network is one of the main anti-vaccine groups in the United States. It's like, how can you fight that, right? They're not anti-vaccine. They just want research around vaccines before mandates are put in place. And actually, they're very anti-mandate. So
thanks, okay. Google. Thanks, Google, for your little profile in our search results.
I wanted to ask you, because Clayton does study, you know, how we present ourselves on the internet. Is there any way to go against Google's summary versus what your... Like, Google just wrote this up, right?
I mean, the only real way you can do this is to have your own sort of, you know, business or personal profile. But this is, they're pulling from Wikipedia.
Right.
Right. We know that Wikipedia is trash. It's owned by...
And partisan.
And partisan. Isn't David run by billionaires? I don't know who runs Wikipedia, but it's a total... I mean, it's, you know, it's run by the deep state, basically.
Yeah, I don't know who the actual, who actually runs it.
Anyway,
but it's garbage. Yeah.
Okay. So they've been fighting the CDC in court over the data that the CDC kept over the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, the data that we're going to talk about now does not come from the pharmaceuticals. It does not come from doctors. This is self-reported data that came from the V-Safe app. I wonder how many of you, if you did get a vaccine, were told to download this app and said, maybe, you know, if you have an adverse response, you can tell us. Didn't seem like they really wanted many responses, because they didn't roll it out as harsh, as hardcore as they did the vaccine itself. But ICANN went after this data, and a judge ordered the CDC to publish this, and they finally did. Now, V-Safe was a voluntary app that people could use to report their experiences with the vaccine. So obviously, when people self-select into a study like this or into a data set like this, they're going to, because they've self-selected, be a different type of group. That it's not randomly selected, right? It's not a random trial. This is not a clinical trial. These people have self-selected to report some information. You could, at the time, report for your family or yourself. And again, it was opt-in. So the data set includes 10 million people, which isn't a ton when you consider that nearly 270 million Americans received the vaccine. ICANN has collected this data, and it is available for you to search and filter. We will put the link in the chat below, or I can just tell you it's icanndecide.org/v-safe-data. The data to be honest, is not that scandalous. So you have to think if they had, because all the data that we're finding ourselves seems to be more upsetting and scandalous. But this, they should have just told it to us and maybe we wouldn't have felt so, you know, hoodwinked. It is a lot of reporting of the same things that people were sharing online about getting the vaccine, is pain, fatigue, headaches, achiness, nausea, chills. But as we've reported many times on this show, the app gave you a finite list of symptoms to choose from. So you could not self-report, say, abnormality with menstruation or myocarditis or any of the other things. Some of the things that, for instance, Eric Clapton, right, who talked about certain inability to feel, paralysis and things like that. This was not an option in this list of symptoms. So you see the way that it's broken down is that most common symptom was pain. Obviously, there's a lot of soreness when you get a vaccine, fatigue, headache, and most of it was fairly mild. And, you know, you can see the red here is moderate and severe. Of these 10 million people, 7.7% of BeSafe users had a health event, though, that did require medical attention, including emergency room intervention or hospitalization. And another 25% experienced events that required them to miss school or work for at least one day.
Well, who's your daddy that said I had paralysis?
Yes, but wow, that is, I mean, and we've reported things like that before. And you remember how terribly people treated Eric Clapton for saying just that.
Right, right.
And that is not a listed symptom in here. If you kind of go down, why don't you, because you have, we can take a live link of Clayton's screen. If you click the link here, you can sort of manipulate.
Which one?
Well, and I just want to mention too, when I have been doing polls and stuff on the channel, the percentage of people that reported reactions was like, I was expecting like a really low percentage. There were more people reporting adverse reactions than not. And I was like, whoa, this is insane.
Wow.
There were more people reporting them than not. Yes, but again, not necessarily with this app is what this data is telling us. Right. Now, interesting.
I'm just saying people that were outside of the what they've said is, you know, the criteria, like these are the ones that people are reporting, but right, like they were outside of that.
Yes. And we played video of a nurse here recently who had asked her, the attending physician at the emergency room where she worked, why are we not reporting these adverse effects to the CDC or VAERS, and was fired for doing just that. And none of her experiences would have fit into this like neat little app experiences. Interestingly, you can sort this data by age group, and the age ranges are either younger than 3 or older than 3. So when you filter out anyone older than 3 and you only get it's the 2 and under age group, you get 13,000 babies. And the number of symptoms in that group is 33,000 symptoms, including irritability, sleeplessness, pain, and loss of appetite, which is fairly normal for most vaccines. If you've ever taken your toddler for their normal vaccines, you know that this is what you can expect. Now, when you filter the vaccine brand, the data shows disproportionate number of adverse events by Moderna. Which is interesting. When you filter by gender, the data shows more adverse events reported by women than men and more white people than any other gender. Again, we have to remember this is a small data set, and the people who would download this app and then keep up with it are a fairly select group in and of themselves. So what's interesting here is why the CDC would hide it if this data is so unremarkable. And do they have follow-up data for these people? Because was there a way in the app or did they just say, oh, some kind of pain and fatigue, normal, goodbye, we're logging you off, right?
Right.
We don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so troubling. I mean, it's so troubling too from the moms, and then of course to see this in children.
Right.
Like, oh, just pain. They're not eating. All of these like side effects as a result of it. But wouldn't it have been nice to know this ahead of time? Like, wouldn't it have been nice to know if we had like 2 years of data or a length of time of data that we could have, a parent could have made a determination of whether or not they're going to do this to their kids?
Yes, right? Absolutely.
I mean, we know so many people that did this, and I was like, oh my God, are you crazy? You know, like, okay, really? And then you're going to do multiple versions of it and multiple versions of it.
Right. I don't want to say anything about people who have made those choices, but it did seem, the data continues to show us that, and in fact, physicians are saying this as well, that the calculation of risk of COVID vaccine does not outweigh the calculation of risk from the disease to the vaccine. So there you have it. Again, it's interesting that the CDC would hide this, given that they could have, this was exactly what they were warning the normal symptoms would be, which makes us believe that if we get more information about how this app was run, if there were follow-ups, if there were people who reported things not in these finite options who were booted out of the app, there are more questions, and I'm sure that ICANN will get more answers.
Well, we've got more news to get to here on the show. Poison Ivy says, love the show. Do you guys have advice about preparing? We'll talk about that a little bit. Preparing for whatever is ahead. The average people in Canada, you live on a limited budget. I mean, there's a lot you can do. We're talking about prepping and like taking care of your families right now. It's like, you know, making sure that you've got just simple foodstuffs and simple food stores like rice and beans and making sure you have a clean water source, like, you know, an affordable like Berkey water filter, like my sister and brother-in-law got. And
some of those are not so affordable.
No, but they have small ones.
Expensive.
Yes, they are. But there are some that are small that are actually pretty affordable. So again, and then you have this sort of clean water source that's important as well. So yes, there are some things you can do to make sure that you're prepared and making sure you have a food source there. We have a daily newsletter. If you go to redacted.inc, it's totally free to subscribe. Right there, totally free to subscribe, redacted.inc, and it publishes every day, Monday through Friday at least, and you'll be informed over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning, and you'll get all of the news that you can use over your cup of coffee and enjoy that a little bit. Okay, we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about Stella Assange and John Bolton. We're also going to talk about the transgender backlash from a charity, a trans charity.
Yes,
that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. Okay. The fallout continues for Mermaids, which is a taxpayer funded charity in the United Kingdom that has been caught doing what may be unethical things.
Yes. People saying, hey, what's going on with the military move? Well, at the beginning of the show, we covered all of that. So you can watch the replay a little bit later. But yes, some big moves this afternoon there. All right. Let's talk about Julian Assange. Obviously, there's a big event happening this weekend in Washington, D.C., a Julian Assange event, Free Julian Assange event. So people can look that up and follow that. Of course, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is behind bars at a maximum security prison, one of the harshest prisons in all of the UK, Belmarsh Prison. And what are his crimes? Publishing classified information that revealed the war crimes, the cover-up in Afghanistan and Iraq, and what the United States and the UK were doing to push this awful war. It showed exactly what the imperialists were doing. And he's a journalist. He didn't hack into a computer, like log into government computers to get this information. And of course, the empires didn't like this. Mike Pompeo, in fact, the former head of the CIA, basically said, yeah, this was our goal. Like, our goal was to, like, we want to bring this guy down. We wanted to kill him.
Yes, to end his life.
End his life is what Mike Pompeo said. So they're trying to bring him to the United States. They're trying to go through this extradition to try to get him under the Espionage Act behind bars. He faces a possible prison sentence of, get this, 175 years if convicted in the United States. It will be absolute crushing to free speech and journalism if this is allowed to happen. But there was an unbelievable exchange last night between his wife, Stella Assange, and war criminal John Bolton from the United States. It's rare that you get to see television like this. First, I want to show you Piers Morgan asking Stella Assange, you know, why is your husband behind bars and how has he been suffering? Watch this.
Where is this going to go? What do you hope to achieve? What do you think may happen here? Well, Julian faces a potential sentence in the United States of 175 years for doing journalistic work, for receiving information from a source and publishing it. And it was in the public interest. It was about U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he revealed tens of thousands of civilian deaths that had not been acknowledged before and war crimes that have never been prosecuted.
Let me play devil's advocate. As a journalist, I thought that a lot of the stuff that appeared in the New York Times and The Guardian and various other newspapers who acted in collusion with Julian and WikiLeaks over those revelations, they redacted a lot of the more sensitive stuff which might lead to people's lives being impacted by the revelations. WikiLeaks didn't. They just put it all out. As a journalist, you would never do that. So they weren't really acting as journalists. They were acting as, here it all is, and work it out for yourselves, whereas the newspaper editors acted like what I would say proper journalists should do, which is to be careful about exactly what you put in the public domain. Do you accept that?
I don't accept it because it's not true. WikiLeaks did actually redact all of those publications from the Manning that Manning gave to WikiLeaks. And in fact, it was in cooperation with those newspapers. They told WikiLeaks what had to be redacted, and then WikiLeaks published it redacted. In fact, WikiLeaks withheld 15,000 documents from the Afghan war logs, got criticized over redacting too much.
Oh.
Did you read them, Mr. Pierce Morgan?
So, actually, no, they redacted a lot, and they were actually taken to task about that. Like, WikiLeaks is redacting documents? Like, did he even understand what he was talking about? So it goes on from there. So that's just the palate. That's just the appetizer.
It's the amuse-bouche.
Yes, it's to get you started. So 175 years behind bars. He then brings in war criminal Ambassador John Bolton to get his perspective on Assange's trial. Listen to this. So he turns then to war criminal John Bolton for perspective. Watch.
Why is America so intent on bringing Julian Assange to unbelievably draconian justice of 175 years, i.e. the rest of his life in prison?
Well, I think that's a small amount of the sentence he actually deserves. He's committed clear criminal activity. He's no more a journalist than the chair I'm sitting on. The information that he divulged did, in fact, put many people in jeopardy. It undercut the ability of the United States to have confidential diplomatic communications, not just with other foreign governments, but in many countries with dissidents, people who even speaking to American diplomats could find themselves in trouble. And so, you know, he's been complaining about his treatment over the past period of time. He's the one who sought asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy. Now he faces extradition to the United States. I presume he will get due process in the United Kingdom to determine whether extradition should go forward. And when he gets to the United States, he'll get due process here. And I hope he gets at least 176 years in jail for what he did.
What a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
175, no, 176 years in prison.
Oh, it's because of... go ahead.
Go ahead, Philip.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I remember it, the big part of this takeaway was that what Assange and Manning exposed was an attack on civilians that killed something like upwards of like 80 civilians. Isn't that what like the big takeaway was? So what sensitive like diplomatic channels were harmed in that? Like, it's so bizarre.
Right.
I'm not sure. And I think the United States harmed its own diplomatic relationships when it was tapping heads of state's phones, as we learned about, such as Angela Merkel.
Right.
So that had nothing to do. Julian Assange didn't do that.
So 176 years in jail. He's such a, I mean, he's a disaster. So now watch Stella's response to John Bolton.
Stella?
Well, of course, Ambassador Bolton is kind of the ideological nemesis of Julian. He has, during his time for the Bush administration and later the Trump administration, sought to undermine the international legal system, ensure that the U.S. is not under the International Criminal Court's jurisdiction. And if it was, Mr. Bolton might... in fact, be prosecuted under the ICC. He was one of the chief cheerleaders of the Iraq War, which Julian then exposed through these leaks. So he has a conflict of interest here.
Ambassador Bolton?
Oh, that's so ridiculous. I have an opinion. So does Assange's wife. I guess we both get to speak them. You know, I think that what she fears is being brought to the United States and having Assange put under trial. If he's innocent, she can at least show reasonable doubt that he's not guilty, he'll go free. What's she worried about?
Just laughs.
Well, and she just said you should be under trial, but you are changing the circumstances so that you cannot be.
Right.
So if you believe so heartily in trials, let's all have one then.
Right.
You have one too.
You are a war criminal, John Bolton. You are a war criminal. And we won't be a part of the International Criminal Court because we know that you would be tried for these violations of international law.
Right.
So we won't join it as the United States because we know we would be vilified. These guys would go to prison.
A whole lot
of them.
She's doing a great job keeping her composure because I want to go all Ricky Lake on him.
Well, you're Assange's wife. Well, I guess Assange is what she has a first name, by the way.
Yes.
Like we have to call you Ambassador Bolton. You can call her by her. She's not just Julian Assange's wife. She's a lawyer, by the way. She's very intelligent. And she's been amazing through all of this. That was her response. Watch now. Watch Bolton's sort of dickish response to all of this.
Let her say Julian Assange cannot get a fair trial in America. Let her say it.
Okay.
Well, he cannot get a fair trial in America because he is being prosecuted under the Espionage Act, and he cannot bring a public interest defense. He cannot say, I published this information because it was in the public interest, precisely because it is under the Espionage Act. And it is the first time that a publisher has ever been prosecuted under this act. It's something that constitutional lawyers in the United States have been warning could happen for the past 50 years. And the New York Times and the Washington Post say this prosecution strikes at the heart of the First Amendment.
Yes.
Wow, yeah. She is on fire.
Yeah. So I love the way that Caitlin Johnstone put it so well in her newsletter this morning. She said, an appearance on Piers Morgan Uncensored, the wife of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, explained that the threat her husband persecution poses to press freedoms around the world and the profound suffering his imprisonment has inflicted upon him. As some kind of bizarre counterbalance to the family of a persecuted journalist pleading for basic human rights, Morgan invited on John Bolton, the man who was the national security advisor to President Trump when Assange was in prison under a U.S. arrest warrant, which, if you think about it, is kind of like having a sex trafficking victim on your show and then bringing in Ghislaine Maxwell for a balanced perspective.
Yeah,
it really is. Like, who's the exact opposite and worst person we could possibly find that exemplifies war criminality?
Because she is personification of pain and humanity,
right,
of what's happening to this family. They have two small children, and she doesn't play that card of like, I have two small boys. We have the right to raise them as a family. She's not playing that card at all, but she is a bit too personable. And so they need to put her juxtaposed with the man who actually wants her to continue hurting, wants to deny her family existence. And she just stands up to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
She's amazing. So this weekend in Washington, D.C., if you happen to be in Washington, D.C., there is a Free Julian Assange rally. It's going to be big. Hopefully tens of thousands of people will be out in Washington, D.C. So if you are in that area and you want to come out and support it, absolutely do that. We'll link it up in the show description below where you can find out more information about this event this weekend. But these Free Julian Assange events are happening around the world, of course. Roger Waters just showed up at one and gave an impassioned speech, so you can find them. But this is a big one. This is going to be a very big one in Washington, so we will be watching that.
All right. Well, let's talk about the fallout for the transgender charity in England called Mermaids. This is a charity that exists to support transgender people, and they have received a lot of taxpayer money in the United Kingdom up until now. Well, this week they kicked someone off their board because that person turned out to promote research around what we're calling now minor attracted people. This is the new... It gives me a headache to try and think about how to say this in a nice way.
Oh, J.K. Rowling went after this group. Yeah.
That can, because
So a minor attractive.
The word we used to use for this is something that probably could get us in trouble on YouTube. So I'm not going to say it.
We're just going to say I'm going to call them
MAPS. That's all I'm going to say because that is now the new acceptable acronym for
MAPS.
Okay. Now,
minor attracted person.
A minor attracted person. Now there's a distinction here. When I want to make the distinction, I'm going to use P word. Okay. I don't know if that's any better, but we're just going to use it. Okay.
We call him Peter. Just say Peter.
I'm going to use P word. It's the P word and it ends.
Can we call him OPECKers?
It ends with a syllable that rhymes with smile. Okay.
Yeah.
P ends in a syllable that rhymes with smile. Honey, can you clean my glasses while I talk about this?
Okay.
Here we go. Sorry guys. I can't see what I'm trying to, okay. Now, the charity is being investigated by the British Charity Commission for possible inappropriate advice given to minors. We spoke about this at length last week. Please seek out our video about it on the channel. This is what Mermaid's website looked like prior to that investigation. And this is what their website looks like this week. You can see there's this big, announcement here. So let's zoom in on it. It says, due to intolerable abuse, we have made the decision to close the helpline and web chat services for the rest of today and tomorrow. Next week, to enable us to take all volunteers off the rota, we will reduce hours from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. only. We do not make this decision lightly, but our duty of care towards staff and volunteers necessitates a harm reduction approach. To protect our dedicated staff and volunteer team, we hope to resume normal working hours. Okay. So who is being abused now? Remember, they are being accused of giving young girls breast binders behind their parents' back and pointing young people to unregulated spaces in their chats. And they were assisting young people in changing their names and pronouns without parental consent. So I highly object to the narrative that they are crying that people who call for an investigation or standards or any kind of answers from this group are harming the children, right? If you ask for questions, or if you ask for data, you're a hateful person. As if anyone would question their organization, just hates the very notion of transgender. That is a trump card. Oh, you don't let us support trans children, you're hateful. See Mermaid's statements about these investigations this week. It said, here's an update about these false claims. They say, while aimed at mermaids, we believe this is an attack on the trans community as a whole and an attempt to undermine the rights we have fought and continue to fight so hard for. See, it's not an attack on the organization. They're perfect. It's just, you know, these people hate trans people. That's why they're asking us to be an upstanding organization. You know, in fact, there's a great piece this morning from Victoria Smith in The Critic magazine that talks about any attack on, you know, or any questioning of any standards in transgendered care comes out as an attack on the people who are asking the questions. She writes, the adults who claim to champion the cause of trans kids have taken this approach to extremes. The word is trans hostile. Young people are being threatened with conversion abuse. The treatments mermaids promote are life-saving, right? So then if you don't like mermaids, you are life-taking. This sits alongside broader messages, which would suggest anyone critical of, say, puberty blockers or breast binding is supportive of transgender genocide. These are extremely violent words for people who just, for people like me who absolutely do believe in gender dysphoria, but really feel concerned about the use of pharmaceuticals and things that will permanently alter a young person's body and allow them to do this without parental consent. These are things that give me a lot of pause. Smith calls this oppression fantasy. And in fact, the support groups train these young people for this oppression. Like, if you ask questions, this is what they've been waiting for. They're trained to identify your questions as oppression.
So, I mean, we've seen that in some of those Senate hearings, right? When Senator Josh Hawley was just asking simple questions and she's responding by saying, the fact that you're even asking me that question shows that that's a microaggression.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a hashtag, no debate. that's trending around this, where, you know, if a young person wants pharmaceuticals or wants to alter their body, it's believe them, hashtag no debate. Like, we should not debate about it, or else you are in favor of this trans genocide.
Wow.
Yes.
There's going to be a ton of police officers, Spider-Man, Superman, kids, you know, in the
right.
future.
Right. Well, this,
now, I mean, if we start embracing what they want to be at that age.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems with that, right? Because I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole, but yes, you're right. I'm just going to stick with this. I'm going to stick with the script.
Sorry.
That's okay, because
pointing out parallels.
So here's a parallel that gives me pause. So this idea that most teenagers now who present with gender dysphoria have anxiety and internet addiction. Those are two commonalities of this group, right? And the academic response to that now is just believe the children. They know what they are, even though they already have these other pre-existing conditions. And so they, you know, so let's let them alter their bodies. And if you were to draw the parallel between someone who has anxiety and is internet addicted and has, let's say, bulimia or anorexia, would we use that same believe the children, let them do what they want?
That's because, a great point.
Right? And well, so, okay, like, and also, I'm telling you that I feel fat, and so therefore let me not eat at all.
Yeah, let me
right?
do what Princess Diana did, right? And just go into bathrooms and, you know, do this. Yeah.
One of the things that I always bring up is, like, so if you let kids make those kind of decisions, then can they decide that they want to, you know, my 6-year-old wants to marry this 30-year-old man? Like, where does it stop? Like, why does it only stop at that one thing? Because if you take all the things that kids think of when they're little, all the different phases they go through,
yeah.
If we were to take every phase as seriously as this one, they'd be all over the place. But that's the way they should be. They should be kids. So we should let them go through those phases, but not think, okay, because they're in this specific phase, we got to change everything.
It's right.
Like, let
right.
the phases flow. And that's why I feel like it has to be limited by an age, like 21 or something, just like, because they can't even alter their mind until they're 21.
Well, so someone in the chat just says, we're not even fully developed until we're in our 30s, right? I mean,
yeah.
Think about how many stupid
right.
things we do in our 20s, and we're going to allow, like, little kids to make these decisions without parental oversight?
Yes.
And we're going to let states like California allow you to just, like, go across state lines and not even notify parents about these types of changes?
Oh, when I was 12, I saw the movie Great Balls of Fire and thought it was super appropriate for 12-year-old Winona Ryder to marry 30-year-old, you know, Jerry yeah. Lee Lewis. I thought it was a romance. I was, because I was 12, too, and I was like, that's awesome.
And your parents had to explain.
And
no,
they're
no.
like, no, that's...
That's
not
creepy.
Awesome.
That's
creepy. This movie is presenting that as a negative relationship. Okay, but I want to make the point that in the West, risky behavior peaks during adolescence. Okay, so this is an important point. So this hashtag no debate shuts down this conversation. And again, I don't care how people present. I don't care how people dress. I do care about putting a child on a lifetime of pharmaceuticals and things that they will have to fight their whole life and permanently altering their bodies. We're going to talk for a sec in a minute about the new standards of care from this trans organization, WPATH. And they now talk about even giving children hysterectomies, like just completely remove the reproductive organs.
Oh my God.
And that to me, and they've removed the age limit. So I'm going to talk to you about that in a second. Now on to
isn't that kind of the equivalent? I just want to, like, the equivalent of, remember what they used to do to choir boys, you know, like they would castrate them so that they kept their voices the same. So it's like they, like you're, I feel like it's a parent's right or a parent's obligation to make sure that their kids are safe. And I feel like jumping to these conclusions, you're not thinking of the safety of your child. You're not taking into consideration their minds and how they work. And when I say these things, I'm not trying to marginalize what the issue at all. It's just like, I just can't comprehend how you would let children make these life-altering decisions like that and think nothing of it and think this is what has to happen.
And think that this is a compassionate thing to do, right?
Right. Right.
Is that, well, right. My child is this, so I must act compassionately, so I'm going to advocate for them. Or there's a case in New York now where a child's father has been court-ordered to medically transition her and has to go along with now removing the breasts and putting her on a lifetime of pharmaceuticals. So let's get to the controversy now. The controversy around mermaids.
Oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't controversial enough?
No, those things have been existing
okay.
in our society.
My God.
Okay. Now, a trustee for mermaids resigned this week after it came out that he gave presentations at an academic conference called B4U/ACT. This is an organization for mental health professionals who treat people who are sexually attracted to minors. The organization promotes the term MAP in order to be value neutral. And Mermaid says that this research is completely at odds with our values. Although this person, his name's Jacob Breslau, he had this on his bios. This information of what he talks about was readily available. So they knew, but they're saying, no, this is not what we promote. We're shocked here. And if you say that again, you're attacking us and you must hate children. Now I do want to make this distinction about the P word versus this, MAP acronym. Because I did a lot of research on the book, The Culture of Fear, around, P word priests, this media spun fear of priests who are P words. Now the P word, as we alluded to earlier, is someone who is attracted to prepubescent children. And the media use this a lot around priests and freaks, but they use it wrong because most of the scandals involve postpubescent children. Not that that's any better. But on the face of it, right? So if we have this distinction, maybe, then there are organizations that help MAPS, minor attracted people, rather than pretend they don't exist and then let them do predatory things. Okay. So the person that Mermaids kicked out, though, Jacob Breslau, I decided against sharing the bits of his research that were objectionable because they are disgusting. I showed them to Clayton and I was like, we can't show this. One Twitter user points out that he studies children's own queer desires, and that the paper got him in trouble the most in 2011 is he's calling for in his academic research a form of non-diagnosable minor attraction so that activists, scholars, and clinicians can begin to better understand minor attracted persons. So what activists does he want here? He wants some kind of movement, such as the gay rights movement, people to advocate for these people. Now, interestingly enough, in the book, the groundbreaking book, Trans by Helen Joyce, she talks about how in her book, these movements, such as the gay rights movements, can be grounded in legitimate things, but it can also be exploited by people who harm children. I just put some of my highlights here, and I want to admit that I redacted this part because it was just too icky and I don't feel comfortable sharing what's under that. If you want to get a screenshot of that, you can at me on Twitter, I suppose. What she writes about this is that trans activism can be exploited by those who would harm children, aka this dude that we're talking about. Not that trans people or trans activists want to harm children or do not care if others do. Absolutely they do. She said in the late 60s, some European liberals thought that breaking down sexual taboos was a task that started young. Then this redacted part. And what happened was child abuse, though motivated by political conviction rather than sexual desire. And it did not take long before these P words saw their chance. She says the leaders of sexual revolution were men whose aims were to legalize homosexuality and in some cases smash the heterosexual family unit. Few, if any, wanted to endanger children. They simply did not give children enough thought. Left-wing organizations tolerated groups such as the UK's P word information exchange, which had links with the Labour Party, did you know that? And the civil rights group now called Liberty. In Germany, a political organization called the Study and Work Group on P-word made remarkable advances. In 1980, a youth group affiliated with the Liberal Free Democratic Party adopted P positions, as did the Green Party, formed in the same year. So, like, it's easy, you can see, for this to be exploited, and worse so, if the conversation is around no conversation, no debate, right?
Right.
And so, in fact, one journalist who found advocates in this PIE organization, she was tasked with reading their sort of anthem book, and this person wanted to change the age of consent to 4.
4 years old?
4 years old.
Yeah, they can make decisions then.
Yes. Consensual, yeah. Right? Yeah. Let's.
I mean, my 4-year-old sleeping with a box of cookies. You know.
Yeah.
You know what else? What else did my 4-year-old do? Like they're ready to. You know.
And so you know these groups are more likely than other groups to attract these miscreants, right? These advocacy groups. And by trying so hard not to criticize because the woke crowd wants to be tolerant, we will fail to protect children. As Joyce goes on in this part, she says, the worry is not, I repeat, that trans people are unusually likely to be child abusers. Gay people are not either. And yet their movement was infiltrated by those who were with 2 baleful consequences. Children who are harmed, who could have been kept safe. And even today, homophobes conflate homosexuality and pedophilia. Anyone who cares for the welfare of either children or trans people should want to avoid history repeating itself. But we seem to be erasing.
I even saw on TikTok.
Yeah.
I was just going to say really quick, I saw on TikTok, they even have a flag now for it.
Oh my God. Of the P word?
For the maps. Yeah.
Oh.
What is happening to this world?
Okay. I won't be following that.
Oh my God. You want to see what, I mean, this is the destruction of the Western world you were watching unfold right before your eyes. Like,
well, I am, you know, I'm not willing to sort of throw it away like that. I'm interested in the academics of it. That's why I read books like this, because I believe that there exists in here something that can be saved and something that is massively being exploited, specifically for the purposes of big tech and
big
pharmaceuticals.
Pharma. Yeah.
Yeah. And now that means we just erase the idea of children altogether by just lowering the age that it's socially acceptable to do these things to children and their reproductive systems. In September, WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, published these new standards of care, and they dropped all age requirements for all the things that they do, not just changing names and pronouns, but also breast binding, also breast removal, also hysterectomy, also puberty blockers, also cross-sex hormones. Now they have no age limits for those things. They just say, you know, they used to have at least, you know, no breast removal before 18, that kind of thing. Now they're just saying physicians should use discretion when doing this, but otherwise, you know, do it if you want to. And you know why they can? Because they're backed by big pharma and health insurance companies, and that they will charge a lot of money to do these things to young people's bodies. Even though, as we have discussed many times, there's no clinical trials on things like breast binding before the age of 18. There is no approval of puberty blockers for transgender. It's approved for something completely different. And now this is sort of bleeding in over into older people's bodies too. I want to conclude with this report out of Scotland on Wednesday that showed that half of the transgender inmates in Scottish prisons began transitioning after they were already convicted. The Scottish Prison Service said there were 16 trans inmates, 8 of who began their transmission while being cared for in custody following their remand or conviction for their current offense. Now, this may be all totally fine if it weren't for the fact that many of them were convicted sex offenders, right? So, and all but one was a biological male.
Jesus.
So a biological male goes to prison for sexually assaulting somebody and then decides they want to transition to being a woman, and then subsequently gets put in prison with other female inmates, where presumably many of those women are the victims of sexual assault in their lives.
Right.
And now have to be housed with sexual predators. Do we care about them at all? Jeez. Or are we too busy breaking down the idea of female that we can't care about these women who find this very,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just
lose
their humanity at that point.
There is no mention.
Does it matter anymore?
Yeah. There's no mention of hormonal assistance. So we don't know if the Scottish government is actually paying for the medical transition. This leaves many questions unanswered.
Kimberly Diamond in our chat just says, yeah, Twitter is actively protecting maps. She's been massive reporting them and they do nothing. Well, maybe Elon Musk will have something to do with that. Who knows? I mean, I doubt it. We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, just so you know, we have Rumpel Gold in our chat is trans. And she's saying most trans kids are not actually trans. It's a fake movement. Real trans people are fighting this too. Trans meds is what we're called.
Yeah.
Reddit.
Yeah. And again, I've said many times, gender dysphoria is real. It usually happens at the age of 4, not 14, which is what we're seeing more common. But if you talk about any kind of social spread element, it's very dangerous on the internet right now. I think that, you know, I try really hard to present this information in a way that absolutely legitimizes the fact that gender dysphoria is a real thing. But what we're doing right now is experimentation on children. Like, if you were to tell somebody, hey, how about we just go ahead with sex change for children? You okay with that? Right? Nobody would be okay with that. But the way that we're done changing the conversation and shutting down people who ask questions as hateful will have these just terrible consequences. And it's not just the consequences on the children who actually do something on their body, although my heart goes out to them forever. But it's also a message then that we share with other children that if you are not gender conforming, if you don't like baseball and you're a boy, then that's not how it is to be a boy. And so these are damaging messages to people who are otherwise not gender dysphoric.
C. Hartley says, this is heartbreaking and so maddening. Yeah, Henry says, this is pure madness. I know, when I listen to this stuff, I feel like, what world am I living in now? I mean, I'm 45 years old. I just can't remember. It seems like in the past 2 years, we have just lost our collective minds around this kind of stuff.
Well, and the way I look at it, I agree with you, but like, if you're an adult, I'm like, okay, you, as an adult, kind of do what you want. But when it starts to go over to affecting kids, that's when I get upset. Like when it's affecting innocent children, you know what? Like if you want to fight your countries and war and all this other stuff, men against men and all that, that's fine. But once it starts to involve innocent kids, I get militant because like that, they are innocent like animals. They don't have a choice with what positions and predicaments they're put into. It's up to us to keep them out of them.
Yeah, you see all of this indoctrination. I mean, you see it. You see it in these young kids. I mean, you see videos of this indoctrination. And not just on this topic, but other topics. You know, militant religions and, violence. You train these kids at such a young age to carry out violence in gangs and other things. So, I mean, they're very malleable. Right. I mean, they're incredibly malleable at this age, and to tell them that they are this or that and then go and like shove them off to a hospital to get something done when they're 4 years old is
there's no answering for how the pharmaceutical industry will benefit from this. And I find that incredibly maddening. And again, you know, what is it that these people who want to shut down the conversation want? They don't want standards of care. Obviously the new standards of care have no age limit. So they want it to be as open-ended and open medicine cabinet as possible. And the trump card they play is that it's harm reduction, is if you don't give us what we want, these kids are going to harm themselves. But that is a major part of the message that is all over Mermaids. Like, oh, we're so glad we're here for you. So you don't go and hurt yourself because you would otherwise. Right. It's feeding them this scripting about how you would otherwise do this. Right. And that is also it's very troubling. So, again, I hope we presented this information in a way that shows how dangerous the conversation is and how hard it is to even say, I support real research about this and I want real answers before children are harmed, and how that gets shut down and you hurt the organization's feelings because you hate children, apparently.
Apparently. All right. Please subscribe to the channel. We take on tough topics like this that you won't see perhaps covered in the mainstream media and stuff that is redacted we cover here on the show. So please subscribe to the channel and make sure that we are, you set the little bell notification so you'll be notified when we go live. We are live Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time here on the channel. I believe we have, Frank says you presented, well, I'm not going to read that. All right, let's take a few super chats. We might not be able to get to all of them, but we'll try to hit as many as we can here before we have to wrap things up. So let's get a few super chats in.
I don't know what's going on with YouTube, but it is not, like, I've refreshed several times and it's saying no super chats yet. We aren't able to show super chat transactions at this time. They're like all gone.
Oh, YouTube is screwing up here. I see a few. Just see Napweed.
You see them in chat.
I'll just try to read some of them. Napweed, a significant number of children who do transition harm themselves. So the point is fatuous. Dawn Gon says, what about saying petal flies? Maybe the P word is best. Still gross. Welcome to Jay-Z, new member. And that's all I can see, unfortunately. Someone in chat asked, I see Yo Solo Squad is all I got. Someone in chat asked if a Muslim country, they can marry a 12-year-old as a Muslim living in a Muslim country. I can confidently say you will not be going back home if you do that. Okay, so that's not accurate then, right? Okay, thank you for that. And thank you, Merrick, for a $50 super chat. Really appreciate that as well. Thank you. So that's all I can see. Unfortunately, YouTube is having problems tonight for some reason. What about Rumble? What do we got on Rumble? Any Rumble Rumble chats that we can read that are...
Hold on one second. The problem with Rumble is, like, I even sitting there monitoring it, they just go by and they don't save them anywhere, so I can't see them.
Someone's saying YouTube demonetized us. Is that what happened because of our trans talk? Is that what happened?
What I was wondering, if something happened, but we're still on. So
okay, YouTube didn't block us. Did it be with the trans?
I don't know. I mean, we won't know what they did until we end the stream and go back, so we can't actually check while we're live.
Maybe we don't have a YouTube channel anymore. We'll find out here in a minute. We'll find out. But YouTube. Rumble saying show is fantastic. They lost YouTube. Run only Rumble for now. So maybe YouTube finally booted us for the.
Who said?
On Rumble, they're saying that.
Rumble said that.
Yeah.
Our
viewers on Rumble are saying that. Yes. That they don't see
that
us.
They left YouTube because it went down here.
Mean Raccoon, we do read stuff on Rumble. The problem is that their infrastructure for reading Rumble rants is they disappear and you can't get them, unfortunately. So that's the only problem with that. President Biden. So this just happened a few minutes ago. I'm hearing myself now all of a sudden.
You're
playing your own laptop.
Oh, okay. We do have, because normally we never get sound on my laptop. So that was a surprise. That was a nice surprise.
Everyone says we're still good on YouTube.
Okay, good, good. So, but here, this just happened a few minutes ago. We're learning that President Biden is now going to pardon all federal offenses of simple marijuana possession. Okay. So this is, of course, saving this right for the midterm elections. This was a promise, of course, that he made on the campaign trail. Way to wait nearly 2 years for simple marijuana possession towards decriminalization. Of course, Democrats are really moving towards, like, you know, and of course, even taking a step further, like John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, who wants to let violent criminals out of prison. So, but, you know, this is a much different scenario here. But so this was a campaign promise. So we're going to see this. Biden to pardon all federal offenses of simple marijuana possession. All right. So any other chats we can get to or no? I guess we can't, right?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen any. Anthony is testing them. We're getting your super chats. I just can't. There's nowhere in the YouTube back office. There's usually an area where I go and I can select them all, and it's saying none exist.
Natalie Chavez just sent one. Sending
Natalie
everyone
Chavez.
Love. Yeah.
Yep, you got it.
Sending you all love, she says. Thank you so much. A lot of you from Canada saying they were following our Canadian story yesterday and said that there's like no coverage of the Trudeau hearing that's coming up. There's and likely there won't be. So we will try to cover it as much as we can here on our show because we've been watching the story very, very closely. Thank you. We will be following that. Anything else you guys want to say, or am I just the only one talking here?
Well, this is the time we normally do super chats.
I mean, for me, you remember back when like early on in the Redacted show, when you'd be like, are you ready to get comfortable, uncomfortable? Because Redacted starts now. That would have been a really great lead into this today
show. Yeah. You want to get uncomfortable? Yes. Time to get uncomfortable.
Why? What did you find the most uncomfortable? The last segment?
Probably the last segment. Yeah.
Definitely the last segment, but not because of the content, but just because like you were talking about like dancing on eggshells, sort of like trying to get through that story without getting banned was remarkably tense. Yeah.
I thought we stepped around it in an appropriate way. What do you think? You want to talk about this later?
I think we did. Yeah. I think he did for sure, but we'll see if YouTube agrees.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. It's like, you know, it's like they have a certain set of like guidelines of things you can say. And, and you just have to be very careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
Edwin says, hey, Clayton, if you go on Joe Rogan's podcast, would you hit the blunt? I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't be able to put two sentences together. No. I mean, I have a cigar. You get me a good cigar, I would definitely, I love a good cigar. But
he also offers drinks. Like you could have a scotch with him or something. So
Thank you,
Fernando from DC. We see that.
I would do that.
Chat.
I would do a scotch and a cigar. But I wouldn't be able to put two sentences together. I'd probably be like a giggly schoolboy or something.
I'd just fall asleep.
Yeah. Like, can you get a bag
That'd
of chips
be
out here?
One of his best shows.
Yeah. So we are still on YouTube. Yes, yes. All right, everyone. Well, we're going to wrap things up. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this.
We got shook up, you guys. We're like, did we say wrong? All right.
We didn't.
It's never our intention, you guys. We take on these hard topics and we try to do them in a way that is allowed. And we have no agenda other than to ask questions. It's never our intention to, you know, poke the bear. And so,
yeah. What's okay. So sad is you know, you can't ask questions anymore. Like if you ask questions, you're immediately given a label, you know, you're some sort of apologist or you're racist or this or that. You just can't ask questions anymore. It's really, really sad.
Yeah.
We try to cover the topics you won't see other places, and we appreciate you for being a part of our community here and subscribing to the channel. Over on redacted.inc, once again, we do have our daily newsletter. Also, while you're on the website, you can choose two things, either join the newsletter, which you can for free. And then on the other side, you can become a channel member, which supports independent journalism, which is what we do here. So we are not run by billionaires. You can become a VIP member and subscribe. You'll get access to exclusive content and early updates and early videos that we don't publish other places. All of that is available as a channel member when you become a supporter of what we do here. So I really appreciate all of you. Thank you, guys. And no censorship here. Much love to all of you.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bye.